What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Soul Food Diet Podcast. I'm your host, Kiana Wong, an online health and wellness entrepreneur that specializes in binge eating, personal development, health, and fitness. I've gone from silently struggling with eating disorders for over 10 years to owning and operating my online coaching business specifically designed to help binge eaters. Here, you will learn the tools to beat binge eating, get fit without dieting, and how to find ultimate freedom with food, your body, and your life. Join me and many others in our quest to share our stories in order to empower you to become your highest self and become free from food jail. Everyone is always searching for the next best diet. Well, this is it. Welcome to the Soul Food Podcast. What's up, you guys? Welcome back to the Soul Food Diet. Today, we have a very special guest. I have known her for almost 10 years, which is absolutely bonkers in my mind. Where does the time freaking go? I met her on the very first day of my high school career, and we've definitely had our ups and downs, but she is a very dear friend of mine, and we are here today to talk about something incredibly important and something that I feel isn't talked about a lot because there's a lot of stigma, a lot of fear, and I think that I'm very grateful for Kristen to be open to sharing this story with me and to have this conversation because it is such an important conversation to have, and especially being able to tell your story it leaves you very vulnerable, and it's not an easy thing to do. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this story because I think everybody needs to hear it, whether or not you've dealt with sexual assault before. But without further ado, let's get into the episode. This is Kristen Thompson.
So hi, Kristen.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Did you just want to go ahead and start, tell the people kind of about who you are, what you do, and just kind of give them an intro to kind of who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Kristen Thompson. I'm a 22, almost 23, which is crazy, year old journalist and content creator. Currently, I work as a podcast producer and a freelance writer, which is really exciting. I don't know. I'm not very good at like self bios. It's usually just like, hey.
So it's like awkward. It's like, hi, I exist in the world somehow.
It's like when you're in a job interview, you're like, here's all the things that are impressive about me. And I'm always just like, yeah, like, look at me. I don't know.
Oh, and then they ask you what your downfall is. And then you're like, I care too much.
It's like, okay, well, do you want the long list or the short list?
Really? Do you really want me to tell you what's wrong with me? Because I can start.
Yeah, I got a few things here for you.
So today, Kristen and I are going to be talking about, you said that this is something you hadn't really talked about before, right? To anybody else?
Not publicly, for sure. Like, obviously in one-on-one conversations and
yeah, of
course, whichever, yeah. But this is the first time it's going to be, like, out there.
So I have known Kristen since grade 10, which we would have been like 15 years old, which is crazy. It's almost been 10 years.
Yeah.
But I've known Kristen for years and years and years, and we were very, very close. And Kristen went through some sexual assault. And was it in grade 11 that we were?
End of grade 10.
End of grade 10. Okay, so we would have been around 16. And so what we really wanted to talk about today was sort of the awareness around that, because I mean, and you see it so much in the media too and everything, and there's just so much stigma around it. And I feel like there's not a lot of information out there that people actually talk about the reality of what happens when you are a victim of sexual assault. And so that's kind of what we're going to talk a little bit about today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So do you want to go ahead and just kind of start and just kind of talk about, obviously not the details, but just sort of like the basics of kind of what happened and how it affected you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the story, as you know, and as people will find out, is a bit convoluted and all over the place and complicated. But in February of 2012, I was, I would say, like, fairly violently sexually assaulted by a previous partner, by a previous boyfriend. Which resulted in a lot of different things. But it was something that was very hard to cope with at the time. I was only 15. So it was, you know, trying to figure out what that meant, and how to go forward with that, and kind of how to take back my autonomy after that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So I had a group of friends in the city, including yourself and, you know, a few other friends that, you know, I relied on and would tell kind of how I was feeling as I was feeling it and that kind of thing. But I also had a big group of friends that were outside of the city who I had, you know, spent a number of summers with and had fairly close relationships that way. And I found myself relying on them a lot heavier. And I think a part of that was it wasn't a lot of face-to-face interaction. So I could kind of hide myself and the amount of pain that I was having kind of behind the computer screen or behind the phone screen. So a lot more of what I shared about that trauma and about my feelings about that trauma was with them. And so July, later that year, a lot of these friends that I had trusted this information with decided, and I don't really know why or like how it came about, but had decided that they all of a sudden didn't really believe that it had happened to me. Based on like a number of factors, the one that they really highlighted was that they didn't think that my outward appearance, because, you know, I'm a woman, a plus size woman, and mm-hmm. not like traditionally beautiful in the sense of like supermodel. They decided for themselves that no one would want to sexually assault me because of the way that I looked.
Wow.
And you know, it was almost like my autonomy was being taken from me all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like your whole identity too. Like part of, I mean, like essentially like it becomes part of your identity, and then to be told that that part of you isn't real, to take away that validation, that's an incredible impact on somebody's mental well-being.
Yeah, and it was extremely difficult. I have said, and I don't know if it's completely true, but I definitely feel sometimes that that situation was harder for me than the original sexual assault.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you're relying on people with the most vulnerable part of you, and they kind of throw it away and tell you that you don't matter. And it's difficult. It's really difficult to deal with.
Yeah. So kind of like if going back to like looking at when it happened versus like when you were kind of in that situation with your friends, what would you say like the differences in sort of the way you were impacted was? Like how did that kind of show up in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my early life, like in my childhood up until I guess the point that I was 13, I had dealt with an abusive family member, emotionally abusive, not so much physically abusive, but so I had, by the time that the sexual assault happened, I had been fairly well versed in dealing with trauma, which is, you know, sad for a young teenager. Mm-hmm. So I know that the way that I reacted to the situation wasn't really the way that people thought I should be reacting or thought I would react. Yeah. I found myself, you know, not wanting to be the victim. That was something that I really spent a lot of time with myself thinking with myself, like, I don't want to be the victim in this. I want it to just, you know, be something that happened and something that I can deal with. So it was something that I very much pushed out of the forefront of my everyday thinking. You know, some days I felt totally okay and, you know, it wasn't on my mind. And some days it felt like the world was coming crashing down around me, which is normal. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people wanted me to feel the way that they would feel in that situation, which put a lot of pressure on me because I'm like, am I not reacting right to the situation? Am I, you know, is my dealing with this in private and trying to be as normal as possible in public wrong? Like it was very, a lot of introspective.
Well, and it's also really interesting because I feel like that's part of the stigma around it is that victims have to act a certain way in order to be considered a victim, right? And it kind of ignores the fact that emotional, like mental trauma, can really affect people in such broad ways, and that it's not really somebody else's right to say, well, you're not acting broken, you don't flinch when people touch you, you're not afraid of the outside world, that must mean your trauma isn't real. And yeah, it's really interesting that those sort of interactions, and like not necessarily that they even happen to your face, but even just, you know, knowing around you, that must have really been really hard to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed when I reacted, of course. The way that I dealt with it was less of a being triggered by things. I am triggered by certain things, but it was more I didn't want it to matter. I didn't want it to define me or my experience. So, you know, I became a little more sexually promiscuous and put a lot less meaning into sex, because this situation was me losing my virginity. It was, you know, like the only tangible thing that like you're supposed to be able to decide in your life, really, was taken.
It's also like when you kind of take away the more emotional side of sex and you make it more about like sex is just sex, it's whatever, it kind of also, yeah, like you said, it takes back that part of you that it's like, well, it happened, but sex isn't really that important. So it's just, it doesn't matter as much, right? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like numbing that that emotional side of you to kind of be able to cope with it and to say, well, it happened and it's sex and it's like, sex is fine, like whatever, right? And so it kind of makes it almost easier for your brain to handle in a way.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I feel like a lot of my trauma or like a lot of the triggering moments that I've had are in relationships or when there's actual feeling there. There's a lot more of a reaction or lack of reaction. I know one big problem that I've had in relationships is that I think I've been claimed to not have a lot of feelings or at least voice those feelings. And it's like, oh yeah, like whatever. And so, you know, I've been painted as always the dude in the relationship. Cause you know, I'm yeah. pushing away that. And I am often the people that I am with, like, are always like, I need more from you. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, what do you need?
That's interesting. Yeah. Now that you're kind of like more like self-aware of like the sort of ways that that's translated into your relationships, how do you feel like you're taking steps to move forward from that or to sort of open yourself up in a different perspective to it?
Well, I've always been someone who's fairly independent and fairly self-reliant. And I'm, you know, I may not be good with dealing with a lot of like things in my brain, but one thing I am really good at is checking in with myself and being able to really think things through with myself. Yeah. So when I feel like I'm in a situation where things are, where shit's kind of hitting the fan, I guess I will often sit with myself and be like, and just reflect on that and try and figure out why.
Yeah.
Why I feel that way.
Yeah.
And I try, especially recently, not so much when I was a teenager, but I try to deal with myself with as much kindness as possible.
Yeah.
Because when it happened, it was really, I was really mean to me about a lot of it.
Did you ever sort of feel like a blame on yourself for the fact that it happened? Did you ever sort of like in your head kind of let go of your attacker in the way that you took the blame off of him and placed it on yourself?
Yeah, totally. It was a lot of like, oh, like I should have seen this coming. I should have been able to do something to stop this. I should have never broken up with him.
Yeah.
And I guess one thing to preface too is like before the sexual assault had happened, when we were dating, he did show signs of this being a possibility. which, you know, he forced oral sex on me while we were still dating, which at the time I didn't think of as sexual assault. I was like, oh, it's just my boyfriend being an asshole. Like, it wasn't, you know, and that's a shitty kind of way to think about it, but that's how it was. And then that that is what resulted in our breakup. So that and a number of other things, but.
So when you say that you saw red flags, when you saw those, what sort of like went through your mind at that time? Like, did you, were you able to recognize they were red flags? And then like, what was sort of the mental process around that for you?
Well, I was young and naive, of course. Yeah.
Which is often when it happens too.
Yeah. I remember just being really uncomfortable with the situation. And not knowing how to communicate that, really to anyone, let alone him or, you know, someone that could help in the situation. So my childish and outward reaction was, that I was going to kind of like, I don't know how to say this, like, I guess, shove it in his face a little bit and just not be very kind about it.
More like passive aggressive kind of.
When I wasn't getting the reaction that I wanted, I guess I was like, well, I don't need to be dating you. And it was very abrupt.
Yep.
And a very swift ending and a very childish way to deal with the situation.
And I think part of it too is like sometimes you don't even know that it's a bad situation or that you are kind of being forced into something that you don't want. Because I mean, I think at least for me personally, like I've obviously never been through what you've been through, but I've obviously been in like situations like that myself where you sort of question yourself and you're like, well, is it just me that I don't want this? Like, should I want this? Is this like something that's normal? And you know, it's almost to like a manipulation of the other person, them making them think, well, it's you. Like, why don't you want me? Why don't you want sex? Like, you should want this. This is part of a relationship, and not really knowing that you can set those boundaries.
Well, yeah. And it was also a bit of the issue was that he was a few years older than I was. So he was very ready to be having sex. And I was like
15.
When we broke up, I was still 14. I was still in middle school. So I was very much like, wide-eyed and didn't know anything. Like, I just, it was so far from my head, other than when he brought it up, and I'd be like, no, like, let's not do that.
So do you think having your partner be so much older, do you think that's more of a responsibility for them to be able to recognize that you're not at that age where you can really develop an opinion and like boundaries around sex? Do you think that sort of like a responsibility for the other person to recognize?
So yeah, I think that the responsibility should be kind of shared between both partners, really. You know, it's your responsibility to make sure you're respecting other people and their boundaries, but I also think it's really important to be educating young people on what consent means and how you can say no and why you can say no and that kind of thing. You know, I got sex ed from grade 4 to grade 12, really. But no one really ever taught me about what consent meant.
It's actually really interesting because, like, even for me reflecting back on it, like, I can't remember ever having a talk about consent or how to have a conversation about boundaries or how to deal with the possible things that can come out of having a conversation of boundaries like that, and then how to deal with that. Like, that was never part of sex ed. It was just like the physical things, like the penis goes into the vagina, you can get pregnant by doing this, this is how babies are born. But it was never a talk about like, this is how you respect sex, this is how you create healthy boundaries for yourself, this is how you communicate, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, and I think that's one really beautiful thing about the Me Too movement and, you know, just more people talking about their experiences online, is that the conversation for young people about consent is happening. Even if it's not being provided by their teachers or by their parents, they're able to access the conversation of consent. And you know, be able to, they're learning how to define that for themselves, which I think is crucial and really important.
Mm-hmm. So I know, like, a really scary part about having a conversation with boundaries, and like I touched on it like a little bit, I think it was like last week or a couple weeks ago in my story, and sort of like the fear around saying no in the moment and actually having those, that boundary conversation, because there's sort of can be like that fear around like, what if my no isn't respected? Like, what if I keep getting pushed? What if sex keeps getting pushed on me? What if like X, Y, Z? So like in your experience, how would you recommend to go about having a conversation of boundaries and giving consent? And if that person wasn't to respect your no, how would you sort of go about dealing with that?
Yeah. So I've been, you know, formulating this for a long time, you know, since that situation, it's been growing. But, you know, sometimes in the moment when you're really in it, it can be hard to say no.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like, you're feeling it, but you have a weird feeling, like you're, when you're in that in between where you're like, I don't really want to do this, but I'm also really into it.
Yeah.
Those situations can be especially hard to say no, but, you just have to put yourself first and those feelings first. And if you're feeling weird, just be like, hey, like, can we take a second? Like, I have a weird feeling about this, and just start the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if they don't respect that, or if you're at the point where you're just like, hey, I need you to stop, and they're not respecting that, I think you are at the point where you can start to, and you probably will start to react more in that biological kind of way where you are pushing them off of you, or starting to get really kind of jittery. And I think in those situations, if you can, the best way you can deal with it is just get out.
Yeah.
Just leave. Don't stay around for a conversation in that moment. Just leave. The conversation can happen later when you are in a safe place.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of it too is as not, maybe not like a self-respect thing, but it's understanding that if a partner isn't willing to be respectful of your boundaries, or to be respectful enough to like have a conversation, then it's sort of like begging the question, like, is this a relationship that you should be in? Is it something that's healthy? Is it something that's going to benefit you? Or is it something that's going to be more of like a, like, question, like, why does this person want to be with me? Like, does this person even respect me? Right.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And like, for me and my relationship, it was very much like, I don't want to be told when I am doing something. And so that was a lot of why my relationship with this guy ended. It was, I wanted to be in control of when I, like, I got to say when we got to do things. And it was very much how I felt. And so, you know, you have to be able to put yourself first and prioritize the fact that you get to decide when you do things. It's mm-hmm. no one else's choice.
So for somebody who maybe doesn't really know what their boundaries are around sex, or they don't really like have experience with sex, maybe they're still a virgin, they're kind of like starting to think about losing their virginity, or maybe they're in a relationship where they're thinking about it, how would you recommend for them to explore what their boundaries are and to sort of figure out what it is that they're wanting and like their intentions behind sex?
Yeah, I would say a really smart way to go about sex, especially when you're young, is to have conversations about it with your partner or the person in which you want to do this, whether you're in a relationship with them or not. You know, just saying, like, putting those vulnerabilities on the table as much as you can and as much as you're comfortable with, and, you know, being able to have an open dialogue with, what would you be interested in? Okay, I'm not really into that. Or I don't really know if I'll be into that. Like, are you open to trying? And then if I don't like it, stopping, or whichever. And honestly, like, one thing I've always said, even when I was young, is if you aren't willing to have a conversation about sex, I don't think you're ready to have sex.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's so important to be able to speak about it with your partner.
Mm-hmm. And
especially
so,
beforehand.
Oh yeah, 100%. So do you think, like the willingness and the openingness to be able to have a conversation about sex, do you think that sort of like starts at a relationship level, or do you think that's something that like parents should be talking about? Like, cause I know like, of course, like people always talk about like the birds and the bees conversation and how awkward it is and all this. And I think that's part of the reason why there's so much stigma around sex, is because like even parents aren't willing to have a conversation with their child about it. So do you think that sort of starts at like the level of like media and like people coming forward and sort of talking about their experiences and like raising awareness around consent and like sex, like real sex education? Do you think it sort of starts with the parents? Do you think it's sort of like a mix of all of it? Of course, like there's teachers, there's other authority figures. Where do you think we can improve on in order to be able to allow younger people to be able to be comfortable to have those types of conversations, and maybe not necessarily just within with a sexual partner?
I think that friends and friendships that you can trust are a very good outlet to kind of explore those things with, you know, the conversation with parents is not a fun one. I had like a minimal one with my mom when I was like 13. But I think furthering education in school rather than abstinence education should be very much protection education, both for your physical well-being and your mental well-being.
And I think it's so important too, is because I like what you said about the abstinence education, is that everybody's like, don't have sex, sex is da 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 da, and it's like, but they're completely ignoring the fact that they're going to have sex. Sex is going to happen regardless or not you're telling kids not to do it or to do it. The point of the matter is that you should accept the fact that sex is a thing, especially as, you know, generations go on and, you know, we start to have sex younger and younger. It's important to just accept that almost, and to really be okay with, okay, this is going to happen. We need to educate them on the ins and outs of it so that when they do have it, they're educated and they have those materials available to them for help if they need it.
Mm-hmm. I also think that there should be a portion in which of the education where, you know, males and females are separated, not for all of it, but just to talk to them about how to explore their boundaries. Obviously, this becomes a bit more of a blurred line when you start talking about the LGBTQ+ community and stuff like that. So I don't know how that would be formulated, but I think it's really important to talk specifically about the more masculine issues or the more male issues with young boys. Mm-hmm. And then also with young girls as well, to just be like, this is how you say no, but for both parties, but you know, it's unique sometimes with your gender and your sexual orientation, et cetera.
Yeah, of course. Well, and it's always so different because the way the social structure is made, the way that sex is brought about in both men and women is different.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely always a different conversation.
Always, because I know growing up it was very like, you know, when the girls had sex it was scandalous and they were sluts and they were doing something wrong, but when the guys had sex they were like superheroes and like so respected and like the cool guys in town and like whatever. So I think it's important to have some of those conversations separate, because I know in youth it's still seen that way. You know, teenagers are still having that kind of conversation and having those bullying moments and whichever. So it's important to definitely educate them on those, I guess, kind of the stigma around their genders.
Yeah. Well, and exactly, like it, I think so much of the time too is that, people like maybe in like men and women, obviously there are women that can be attackers just as much as like men can be attackers. Mm-hmm. But I think part of it too is I think a lot of people who are pushing for sex or like who are considered the attackers don't necessarily even know that they're doing it, you know, like it's sort of one of those things that it's almost like sex kind of becomes a right or it becomes a matter of like self-image or a matter of hurt feelings. And it kind of is almost like too much of a selfish act in order to actually be having sex like with a partner. Does that sort of make sense? I don't know if I explained that well.
I know that there are a lot of situations, especially when you're young, that you don't fully understand how to respect other people's boundaries in like a mature and adult way. But that's why I think, yeah, like the education is so important into teaching that. I think that answers your question.
Do you think, so like in schools, like they have sex education and you were saying like it would be beneficial to obviously like separate the genders and sort of have that different conversation. Do you think it would be more beneficial for students to be taught about sex education and things like consent and, you know, respecting their bodies? Do you think it would be more beneficial to have other people come in and teach them about that rather than have like their peers, like their teachers teach them about it that they have to see every single day?
I think it should be, at least the conversation around consent should be a conversation all the time, not just necessarily in a sex ed sort of situation. And so I think both, honestly, because, you know, a stranger can come in, like you get, they always get like the cool, you know, young adults that like are either abstaining from sex or like super sexually promiscuous, and like they get them to come in and like show you how to put a banana on a condom or put a condom on a banana. And like, they're always fun to hear from. And, you know, you're like, yeah, like cool. But it's also, I think, important that like the people that you don't think that are as cool that you see every day. They also say like, yeah, consent is very important. This is what consent is. Cause then it just increases the validity. And it also shows that it's not just a conversation amongst this hip, cool young person. It's a conversation for everyone.
Totally. I just had a brain fart. Oh my God. So when you were in high school and you were like, this just happened for you, what are some of the other ways that it sort of showed up in your life? Did you feel like, you were like more angry? Did you feel, more like resentment towards friends? Did you feel like you were more closed off? Did it affect your school? Like, in sort of like what indirect ways did you find that it really affected you?
I would say that like, I wasn't very kind, to my parents, to myself, especially. I was very unkind to myself. You know, friendships, I'm not quick to blame that solely on this situation. I think that's also just part of being a teenager, and not being an adult, I guess, is, you know, you're kind of just an asshole for no reason. but I noticed that I became very disconnected from a lot of people that I trusted. And that didn't come right away. That really happened a lot more after. You know, the friendships of some of those people fell apart, that I talked about earlier, you know, those, when I was betrayed by friends, I very much closed myself off to a lot of friendships, and started to shut down. And that reflected in a number of ways, whether it was just me, you know, avoiding hanging out with people, you know, my mom says I can't, or like, the classic excuse, or like a little bit more outward, just like being nasty. So then they'll like, and it wasn't like, I always felt it so bad if I was being nasty, but it was like how I was defending myself.
It was like your defense mechanism, for sure.
And it would be sometimes it would be completely out of the blue for like no reason. I would just say something nasty because then it would be like, okay, I'm not getting too close to this person. This person won't hurt me.
So like when you were dealing with betrayal and sort of like the issues with being able to trust people fully, where did you find that you could find trust and support?
I was really lucky. About a little bit more than a year after the assault happened, I of all things, like, went on this, like, youth retreat, that was in Ottawa, and it was, like, very far away from home, and it was a bunch of young people, you know, trying to elicit change, was, like, essentially the idea for this retreat, and I met some really amazing people And none of us knew each other beforehand. We were all complete strangers, and we bonded through telling each other essentially our deepest secrets and our darkest portions of our lives. And, you know, for some of us, it was talking about our experiences with sexual assault. For some, it was, you know, being like, I'm gay and no one knows except for you guys now. And like, it was very, it was very opening. And we were with two adults who worked with Meet a Wee. That's who like was sponsoring this conference. And it was a group of maybe like 15 or 20 kids. And we all just opened up, completely putting vulnerabilities on the table. And actually in that moment, I didn't. I was still very adamant to do that. But there were other girls there specifically that were, had very similar stories to mine. And it allowed a lot of trust with those people. And you know, one of those people that I met there is like one of my closest friends now. I love him to death. And, you know, it was a way for me to be able to say those things with, and it didn't matter if they didn't believe me, cause it was like, I don't know you.
Yeah. It was almost like a detachment.
Yeah. And it was like, I think that was, it was like that for all of us. And I feel extremely lucky. And I remember we were there for 4 days, got to miss school, which was great. And we were all sitting in the airport, like about to go home, and we're all just crying, like bawling because we had found, like we had put our whole lives on the table to some of these people and we didn't want to leave. We often said like it felt like a second home, and for some of us a first home, because you know some of those kids were in foster care or whichever. So it was very life changing, and I know that that kind of situation isn't always available for everyone, and it's, you know, it's, well, it was really only available for the 100 kids that attended.
But I think like the moral of that is to say like, it really, it gives you your power back almost in a sense to be able to, you know, talk about it and be honest about it and in a space that's non-judgmental and that, you know that you can relate to somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like giving you back that sense of identity.
I think it was the first time after the assault that I had felt like I was in control of my narrative again. Mm-hmm. And like I said before, like a big part of it was like I didn't want to be the victim. I didn't want to, like that's not what I wanted out of the situation, and really the situation where I was told that it didn't happen, and that I was told that I wasn't good looking enough or whatever for it to happen, kind of made me the victim.
Yeah.
And so I feel like
that's like out of your control.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and they named you the victim. Like you didn't consider yourself a victim, but they're the ones who gave you that title.
Yeah. Like someone else put that on me. Mm-hmm. And for the first time then, and I think really now in this situation, like talking to you and speaking about it publicly, even though it's scary and like, I don't know what people are going to think or how they're going to react, but it's really, you know, me being able to change the narrative of my story.
Yeah. Taking back your power.
Yeah. And taking, like, I don't want to be the victim in my story. So I'm going to not be, essentially.
Yeah. And I think that's so important, because I feel like when somebody is sexually assaulted, I feel like that's a really big fear is, what are other people going to say about me? I don't, you know, you don't want that to be the defining part of you. You know, it's something that happened to you, but it's not who you are. Mm-hmm. And there's almost like an underlying fear there that then once you come forward, that's all that you're going to be thought of as.
Yeah, it was really interesting because when it happened, it was really before, at least in my life, or at least in what I had seen, like before anyone had really come out in the public eye being like, you know, I was sexually assaulted. And usually the news coverage around that sort of thing was very minimal, I would say, at that point. You know, it's 2012, you know, it was a weird portion of time. And so I had some fear going into it, that, like, I don't know, people wouldn't believe me or that, whichever else, but it wasn't really something that I was fearful of. And I know that that's a lot different for people now, because it's so out there and so open. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that it's really important for it to be out there. I think it's also really scary.
Yeah.
And it's scary now, like, even for me to talk about it, it's been like 7 years. But now it's like, okay, we're talking about it. Like, holy, like, this is going to be open to anyone's interpretation and how they want to feel in that moment.
Yeah.
And so it's so scary. And I wish I had, like, I wish there was a playbook, you know, after you've been sexually assaulted, here's how you should feel and here's how you should act, but there isn't.
Well, yeah. And it's hard because it's so different for each person.
Yeah, I mean, I know a number of people, you know, they say 1 in 3, but I really think that the statistic is a lot higher than that, especially as the definitions of what sexual assault actually is being redefined. You know, it's not just rape, it's a number of things.
How would you define it in your own words?
I would say, like, any action that wasn't consensual. Mm-hmm. You know, no, any action that didn't get an enthusiastic yes,
yeah,
would be sexual assault. For me, I had the worst of it. I don't even want to say that. I had, I guess, the more extreme of it. But I know women who have just, you know, been in a situation where a guy came up to them on the street and decided that they got to grope them and without really any saying anything to them, just like coming up and doing it, mm-hmm. and then starting to follow them home. Like, that's a scary situation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's 100% sexual assault.
Yeah.
But I feel like,
continue, keep going.
Well, I feel like our parents' generation and those before that, it was very much like, well, boys will be boys, or like normalized a lot more. You know, I've heard about situations with my mom's friends or like, just older people that are like, oh yeah, like that was never, like that happened, but like no one cared to talk about it.
Yeah.
And they're just like, what? And so I'm so happy that like those conversations are finally happening because they're not okay.
So what you said before when you were saying, even when it's like not an enthusiastic yes, so that was really interesting that you just said that. Do you think that even if you're saying yes, you could not be giving consent?
I think that's one of the touchy lines of consent for sure. I like to say the enthusiastic yes, just because then you know, like you're like, yeah, they're into it.
They're excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it comes down to that, what I was kind of talking about before, how it's like, you're into it, but you're like worried, like you have that feeling. So you're like, you want to do it, but you also don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard to define.
Some of it is like, when you're being sexually assaulted, it's not always by somebody who's outwardly aggressive or somebody that you don't trust. Sometimes it's somebody that you've been with for 10 years and, you know, and it's like quiet and it's like manipulation, or maybe it's like them putting it on you because you saying no makes them feel a certain way and sort of like twisting it around to make you think you have to say yes, or, and that kind of comes back to, it's not an enthusiastic yes, it's just the yes, you know. And I think, and it's really interesting because like it's almost a way to get around it, because that's you saying yes, but how did you get that? Was it because you manipulated their emotions? Was it because
you pressured them into it?
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that's a really big conversation to be had too, is because I think that a lot of the time that is the way that sexual assault can be brought on. It's not necessarily like always the act of violence. Sometimes it's people that you trust that are abusing that trust and abusing empaths that, you know, feel guilty for making somebody feel undesired or making them feel less masculine or more feminine, you know, whatever it might be. I think that's a really interesting side of it that's not often talked about.
Yeah, I find that I've found, especially like in college, that like the enthusiastic yes is like,
yeah,
it's you know, like it's a big conversation. But I find that when having a conversation around consent, especially online, it's a lot more blurred than that. But I really do think like the enthusiastic, like, yes, I'm into this. Let's do like, what, come on. Like,
yeah, know, that get on me.
Yeah. Essentially like that's what you need. Yeah. And I'm not comfortable being with a partner unless I get an enthusiastic yes.
Yeah.
And if it's just like, okay, yeah. Like I will usually stop and be like, okay, like, are you sure? Like,
yeah. And then open up the conversation.
Yeah. Cause if you don't want to do it right now, that's okay. I can like go get a pizza. Like, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really like what you said about that. It's not only being able to understand like when you might be being pushed into something you don't want to do, but it's also understanding when you're pushing somebody in a way that they might not be comfortable with, because again, it's like, it's not always, there's not a lot of awareness around it. So sometimes people don't understand that they're being disrespectful of somebody else. And so it's really being educated on both points, because it's really easy to cross the line that you don't even know that you're crossing.
Yeah. Well, I've also been in situations with a guy where he thought he crossed the line and I was like, no, like what?
Yeah.
So it's very much just being able to have that conversation. Cause like communication is so important. I can't like stress that enough. Like just,
yeah,
it's uncomfortable. And sometimes talking to people is really awkward and really just not fun, but sometimes you just have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also too, part of it is like accepting that it's also okay to want to have sex all the time.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Like, oh my God, if my mom listens to this, ugh, but I love
having sex. Not in my virgin ears.
No, I know. My mom, I hate talking about it with my mom, but my mom, like, before I left for college, like, bought me a pack of condoms, and I'm like, oh, get away from me, but she's, like, super into it. Just yeah. The idea of her, like, knowing that I have had sex is, like, weird.
I know.
I'm just like, God, oh. Right? I even told her, I'm like, I could be married and with a kid, and to you, I've never had sex. And she's like, you're dumb. And I'm like, no, literally, I've never had sex.
It's the same with my dad. Like,
oh, God.
I turned, like, 20. Yeah, I know. It was worse. I turned, like, 20, and I was still on, like, his insurance plan. And so I got an IUD, and obviously, because IUDs are, like, $600 without insurance, so I put it on insurance. And I had to give him the slip, and he looked it up. And my mom was like, yeah, he turned to me that day, and he was like, oh, my God, I think Keanu's on birth control. And my mom was like, well, if you don't want to know, then don't look up her medical stuff. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. That's really funny. Yeah. I remember like when I went to college, I went on the pill and I was like, oh, I don't want my parents to know I'm on the pill. Yeah. Like, what the hell? Which I didn't care, but I was like, okay, I like already had health insurance, but I kept the school's health insurance to get the pill.
Yeah.
And I would just pay the extra instead of having it for free because I was like, and I'm like a full adult, but
still afraid. Like,
no, please. Like, I don't want to. And then eventually I was just like, oh, I need it for my iron levels. And they were like, okay.
So like, and interesting, like, that we kind of veered into this. What do you think for maybe like younger adults or like maybe young teenagers that have parents that are very much like, sex isn't real. Like, my kid doesn't have sex. Da, 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 da. How do you think that they could open up a conversation with their parents so that they have that support or so that they can have those conversations? How do you think that is the best way to approach that?
I think if you're in this situation where, the adult of the situation is like, nope, that never happened. And they're not open to that conversation. It's unfortunate. And like, I'm so sorry. I would say instead of trying to force that conversation with someone who really doesn't want to have it, find an adult, whether it be a family friend, you know, we all have a cool aunt. Or like a teacher that you really trust, which is like, I guess that's a bit of a weird line, but you know, something like that, and be able to have those conversations with them. I think an adult is important, but I don't think it necessarily has to be your parents.
Yeah. I think, you know, at least for us when we were in high school, teachers play a really big part in our lives. And like we had our teacher that we trusted, I think more than I personally trusted my parents at least. And I remember having friends that, you know, were worried about like pregnancies and STDs, and they actually went to teachers before they even went to their parents. So I think like being able to have that support system and without the judgment and the stigma in schools is so important too.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Probably the exact same teacher you're talking about. You know, I told her when it happened, and I was very much like, I need help. And she was able to help. And, you know, even at that point, like, I was like, oh, like, I hate this teacher. And, you know, when time grew, I began to love her. But, you know, it didn't matter that I trusted her. It didn't matter if I liked her, because I knew that I trusted her.
Exactly. It's not necessarily always about building friendships with teachers, but it's being able to establish trust and being able to say, look, we're not friends. I know that we don't connect on like a personal level, but if you ever need help, I'm always going to be here.
100%. Yeah.
So, for all of the younger people, whether or not they be like young adults, our age, older, because of course, like, you can be sexually assaulted and carry it into your, like, your late adulthood. What do you think, what would be your number one advice for sort of dealing with it and taking back your power and how you identify yourself and how others identify you? What do you think would be your best piece of advice for them?
This is something that I was told recently, that makes a lot of sense, and that I wish that younger me knew, or at least earlier in the situation me knew. But it's just, treat yourself with so much kindness and understanding.
First and foremost.
100%. You know, establishing those other things can come later, but really, acknowledging how you feel, accepting how you feel, acknowledging that how you feel is okay, and, you know, is how you're supposed to feel, because there is no way that you're supposed to feel. And I think that comes first and foremost, and really after that, I don't know, just giving yourself time, because, you know, you don't have to rush into anything, back into anything or anything like that. I think, you know, it takes a long time to heal, and for some shorter than others, and, you know, situations like that. And, you know, it's been a long time for me, but there, since and still, I have situations where I'll shut down, kind of, and I'm just like, no, I don't want to do this. Like, and that's kind of how my body reacts, instead of like, you know, being like, ah, and like very like hyper aware, I just kind of completely shut down. And so it's just being patient and kind with yourself, and realizing that there is no quick fix, and that there probably will never be a full fix.
And I know that after something like that happens, like, trust in other people can be broken really easily. So what would your advice be if maybe you're dealing with, like, you're having a really hard time trusting anybody, because maybe it was somebody that you really trusted that abused you, and so maybe you're questioning things around you, questioning all of your relationships, who you can trust and whatnot. How would you go about kind of dealing with that and coping with that?
It's really hard, of course, when people that you really care for and love and trust, like, shove it in your face, kind of thing, or are your abuser or anything like that. When they, you know, like, they broke your heart, essentially, in a way. And it's really hard. I don't know. That's a really hard question to answer, because, you know, it all depends on the person's reaction. And how they feel about the situation. But I think it's important to, if you can't trust these people or this person, to figure out a way in which you can trust yourself and your own feelings and your own experience and all of that. I think being able to do that for you will help, because it sucks, and it's not something that you want to hear after being in one of these situations, but you're really on your own for a lot of it.
And it's like giving yourself permission to feel or react in like whatever way it is that you need to, and like not placing judgment around it, and like really just understanding that there is no right or wrong way to react to a situation. And it's also okay to not be able to talk about it right away. You know, there's always, people are always like, go talk about it. Like, you need to come forward or else it's not going to get any better. And it's like, but sometimes you can't, and that's okay too.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like a portion of like how I reacted after the situation of the second portion of the situation, I very much just didn't want to talk about it with anyone. And it took years until I really did. It was a lot of just me thinking it through by myself and, you know, loosely talking to it with people that I already knew. But it was rarely ever me being like, oh yeah, like you're a newer friend. Just like you, this happened. Now it's something that I obviously can talk about a little bit more freely. Which I think has come with a lot of patience and a lot of really, I would say a lot of privilege to be able to have good friends that have been there and have been able to listen about it. I think that was a big part of it, but I know that not everyone has that situation. And so that just comes down to being able to be there for you.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And kind of like jumping off of that, how do you feel like you sort of became open to sex and relationships and trusting people again? Do you feel like that was a very slow progress for you? Did you take any like specific steps towards intentionally trying to become open again, or was it just something that sort of happened naturally as you, you know, processed what had happened to you?
I don't know if it was slow, but I also don't know if it was quick. Mm-hmm. Fairly soon after it happened, I was in a relationship. It wasn't a healthy relationship by any means. But you know, I very much tried to push myself into regular life and, you know, not worrying about, the other stuff. And so it still very much showed itself, when it wanted to, and sometimes in the most convenient of situations, mm-hmm. or inconvenient of situations, I should say. You know, at the end of high school, I was, you know, about to move away for college and whatever. And this is so funny, and you're going to know exactly who I'm talking about. This situation came up with this guy that I did not see coming at all. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, I'm super into this. But, you know, my body was just like, no. And I completely shut down in the situation. Mm-hmm. He made a move and I was like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
It wasn't at the point where I was like, no. It was at the point where I just didn't say anything. Yeah. I was just like,
And he wasn't even a disrespectful person, right? Like, he was somebody
you
trust, and he was somebody who was a very kind person. And, externally, like, obviously you knew you could like trust him and that and all that, but it was still like just a way that your body was responding to you.
Yeah, it was. He was someone I was like fairly close friends with throughout a portion of my high school career, at least.
Yeah,
someone that I knew my entire high school career.
Well, he was in our close social circle.
Like, yeah,
he was our like ride or die social circle for a while there.
Not to like out him.
but we had a big social circle.
Yeah, it wasn't very. Yeah, that's true. But I even at the time I said that he handled that situation with such like grace, and kindness for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's still someone I talk to. Sometimes, and like we've been able to now like laugh and like joke about the really uncomfortable situation of me just sitting there and being like for like an hour, like just not knowing what to do. And him being like,
do you feel like that sort of helped you to trust again, to be able to, you know, be in that situation where you shut down and you felt really like disconnected from yourself, and to be treated then with kindness and respect? Do you feel like that really helped you be able to trust other people again and to be able to open yourself up again?
Yeah, it was very reassuring, which is like so weird to say. Like I, at that point, I'd lost a lot of faith in other people and in potential partners. But at that point, it was very nice to like, once I finally gained up the courage to say no, like I don't know. He was very much like, okay, like, and was kind about it and was not judgmental about it. Maybe a little disappointed. Which like
which
fair.
Okay. It's okay to feel disappointed too.
Yeah. And you know, it's never been brought up in a way in our friendship since that has made me uncomfortable. It was probably about like 6 months until I spoke to him again after that, because I was just like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed. But I hope he doesn't listen to this. might give him a little insight, because one of the things is I never actually explained to him why it happened. We just kind of never trusted ever again, which like is fine.
Everything is a stepping stone, so
and I don't think he knows how significant that moment was for me. To him, I'm sure it wasn't like, it was probably just like another
To him, it was probably just being respectful. And that's the thing about showing other people kindness and understanding, is that you just never know what it means to the other person. So like something that seems just like a little skipping rock to one person could be a boulder to another.
Well, I love that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was, it allowed me to be a slightly more trusting in my own, the way I dealt with relationships, I guess. But for him, it could have just been like another girl or like what, I don't know. But which is like totally fine. I more power to him. But
So. I have one last question for you, and it might be one that maybe you probably haven't gotten before, but I'm curious to know, in what ways do you feel most grateful that you went through this experience and that you had, you know, the experience that you did and you went through the trials that you went through afterwards? In what ways do you feel most grateful for that?
Yeah, you're right. No one's really asked that before. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, like, it's not a question you would think someone would ask. I think it's an important
given
question.
The nature of the whole thing.
Yeah, but I think it's important. I'm extremely grateful for friends that I had and I still have, or that I had and have reconnected with, or whichever. Just people that have not only been, or not even have been like supportive in it, but have just been supportive through it. You know, one of my best friends in the whole world doesn't really know the full extent of the situation, but she doesn't care. Like, it doesn't matter to her. She just is a friend. And so I feel extremely grateful for those relationships. I also feel one thing I think that led to a lot of people being like, oh, she's not reacting right, is it was I've never had a lot of blame for this person. I've never had a lot of anger toward this person. It was always very much just like, I believed that he needed help. And I didn't want him near me, but I wasn't like outwardly angry at him. And I'm grateful for, I guess, recognizing that in myself, that I can, you know, take that, this really hurtful and really painful situation and be able to, I guess, kind of prioritize everyone's feelings and how everyone is doing, which is, it sounds really screwed up and whatever, but I'm very prideful of the fact that I was able to keep somewhat of myself in check, and to help someone who needed help find it. And so I'm proud of that, I would say.
Do you think that you've offered forgiveness to your attacker and the situation and for how everything happened? Do you think that was a really big part of healing for you?
Yeah, I think part of it was immediate for me. It was very much less of a, how could this happen? Like, how could you? And it was very much like, you, we need to get help for you.
Yeah.
Because it, I don't think it was out of a place of hatred or really, I think it was just out of a place of a lot of pain for him. And a lot of, you know, external situations, which I won't get into because it's not my business, but I really do think that.
Well, thank you so much for like being willing to talk about this, because I know that this is something that I personally have never heard or seen in any of like the forums I'm in or in social media and all that. So I think it's really important, your willingness to talk about it and be honest about it.
Yeah, I well, no, of course. And like, I'm, thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so. I've recently seen a couple of people more in the public eye just like come out and tell detailed versions of their sexual assaults, and I was really inspired by that and was like, you know it's one thing to say it happened, but then it's another to be able to talk about it, and I think it will really help. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I know you're on social media, you're a blogger, so where can people find you?
Oh wow. Well, if you want to know more about my crazy life and who I am, I would say Instagram is probably your main route. It's at KLA Thomps, Thomps. And from there, I'm running a bit of a travel and exploration kind of website, which is really fun. So, yeah, but, you know, Kiana's really great, and listen to her podcast and follow her as well. Because, you know, she's what is bringing this to you. I am just the voice.
Yeah. And you also have those funny try food segments with Drew, which I think is hilarious. I laugh my ass off at those. It's so funny.
That's more my you know, like spam account, but I leave it open because people find that. I love how funny people find it. So yeah, if they're all connected, you'll find it all off my main Instagram. And you can watch me try really gross foods and climb mountains and. Yeah. You know, you'll, once this is out, you'll see me promoting this and awkwardly get a bunch of messages from family. So that will be fun.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Kristen.
Of course.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to go follow Kristen, send her some love, and let me know what you guys think about this episode. Let me know what your stories and experiences and opinions are. I think it's a great conversation to have. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. I hope you guys have a fantastic day, and we'll see you next time.